Blog Talk Radio.
Following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Welcome to Logicast.
I know that that is not your favorite Rage Against the Machine song, but every single time that I hear that, I am just, I don't know. Like, I'm not a mosher, but I mean, you know, but I just want to break shit.
It's so good, even though it's not my favorite.
All right. I'll take it. Hello and welcome to Logicast. Logicast is a weekly podcast that airs every Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We discuss issues that involve politics, religion, skepticism, science, history, economics. I'm Jared Smith, and this is my wonderful, amazing, beautiful co-host, Darby Eleanor Macy. You know, I'm just going to keep on with that. Like, if this ever gets, we never will. I mean, we'll never get popular. But if we ever did, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. People stop you in the street and they're like, hey, you're Eleanor. And, you know.
I like Eleanor. I like it better than my real middle name.
What is your real middle name?
Smeagol.
Well, wait, what?
No, not really.
Did you say Smeagol?
Anyway, I did.
You really? You said Smeagol? No. What is your middle? I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
It's Christine.
Christine's not a bad name. My middle name is Daniel.
It's not.
There's an interesting, actually, there's a really weird story behind my middle name. So my mother's first husband, they were high school sweethearts. You know, she's explained to me how much she loved him, and it was one of the best loves of her life, as she described it, but he was killed in an unfortunate accident.
Oh, dear.
They had only been married for like a year. You know, so when I was being born, my mom went to my dad and was like, hey, I would like to name him after, you know, after my first husband. And my dad was like, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. That's cool. I guess my dad's thought was he's dead, so I guess it doesn't matter, you know. But
yeah,
that's actually where my middle name comes from, which is kind of odd now that I think about it. That's really weird. You know, anyway. So I don't know where they got Jared from, though. Obviously the Bible. But I mean, that was a joke. Is there a Jared in the... Hang on. Is Jared biblical? I'm going to Google this right now.
I don't know, actually.
Is Jared biblical? Let's see what Google says. Yeah. Soul name grandchild Jared is Enoch's son, Methuselah. Yeah. I should have known that. That's weird. Jared was a forefather of Noah and his three sons. But that's kind of the thing. Like, Jared was like a filler character for Noah, who was the main character of, you know, of... sort of Genesis. So, I mean, you know, one of the main characters. So, anyway. Okay. So, before we get to the crux of this, I saw, and I'm going to let you kind of set this up, I saw what you shared on Facebook, and I'm going to read this so that everyone can kind of understand what we're talking about. So there was a woman who posted in legal advice, and the title is My Daughter Was Vaccinated Without My Consent, and it reads, none of my children are vaccinated. Totally by accident, I came to find out that my oldest daughter has been fully vaccinated, and she goes on to list all of the vaccinations, without mine or my husband's knowledge or consent. In Ontario, we have socialized medicine and publicly funded vaccines. She admitted that she went, her daughter admitted she went to clinics run for school-aged children, run by the local, you know, public health unit to get her shots, and also got a few at a local walk-in clinic that are not yet publicly funded, and she paid for them with her babysitting money. And the woman says that when I called public health and the clinic to complain, they both said that because she is age 16, they cannot release any information to me, and I'm her mother. My husband and I are livid that she was vaccinated without our consent. What kind of action can we take against public health and the clinic for vaccinating a child without parental consent? Do we have a case for lawsuit? Man, that one. Like, I want to give the daughter a high five. Like, I want to be like, you are fucking awesome, kid. You know, for taking care of your health. And I'm sorry that your mother is such a fucking shitlord. Seriously, when I read that, I was like, obviously, the only thing she's thinking about is that she no longer, you know, has control over her child's, you know, health decisions. And now she wants to have... continue to have absolute control over them. And, you know, I mean, it's not like she took any money from her mom. Like, she took her own money and went and did it. Like, that is some really super responsible shit. I mean, I give her credit for that. You know, that annoyed me. It annoys me that someone thinks that they can file a lawsuit because they don't have control over the body of, you know, their teenage daughter. I mean, this is the exact same thing that we talk about often when it comes to vaccines, or at least I talk about, which is that, you know, when it comes to bodily autonomy, like a child has a right to not get sick and to not die from curable and preventable diseases, because there's this crazy one in a million off chance that they might have an adverse reaction to a vaccine. I mean, You know, like a child, in my opinion, has the right to not die from that stuff. And, you know, that should be, you know, there should be somebody looking out for the child if the parent is not going to do it.
Yep.
So, anyway, I saw that
people
and I wanted to read it because I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. Well, people posted some great responses to her about just real answers to her questions about the age of consent for medical procedures in Ontario and how there are actually some parts of Canada where you can make decisions for yourself if you can prove that you're competent to make that particular decision and going on evidence when you're very young, 7 or 8. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And you have to be careful with that stuff, obviously, because you can't be trusting long-term judgment of people who haven't developed the capacity for long-term judgment. But the reason they have that there is because whack job parents who are denying their children life-saving medical procedures, you can actually do an end run around that if you can talk to the kid whose body it is and say, kid, tell me why you want this procedure. And if they can explain it to you and say, this is my health and my life, and I don't agree with my parents, you can actually get them treatment.
Which I think is great.
I think it's great, too. It's their body, and they're the one they're going to have to live in it or die in it if it was up to their parents. And this young woman was really thorough. Did you see everything? She got herself vaccinated for HPV. She was thorough. She didn't just go for the battery of normal childhood ones. She went for pretty much everything she could get. And I think that's fucking great.
Did you say fucking? I think that's fucking
I
great
did.
Too. I know, I mean, I curse all the time, but I know when you curse, it's a serious thing because you don't, you know, you don't typically have a potty mouth like I do.
I do. I'm judicious with my potty mouth, but it depends on the situation, you know.
I gotcha. For me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I say fuck like I say the word the. I mean, it just kind of comes out. You know, it's kind of crazy. Can I just bitch for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
Donald motherfucking Trump. you know, it's really...
He's a performance artist. I think he's a performance artist.
That's the thing. Like, okay. There is, in general, okay, and people always point to Obama and they say, well, everyone thought that Hillary was going to get the nomination back in 2000, you know, during the 2008 election. Obama was kind of like a diamond in the rough. Well, there were a lot of things that happened that caused Hillary Clinton to lose, you know, to lose that election, you know, to lose the nomination. And, you know, I mean, Obama was a great speaker and he had this good message and people kind of gravitated towards him. And he was like an up and comer in the Democratic Party. So he had a lot of really good things going for him. And once he grabbed onto that momentum, he sort of just took it. And he had great campaign people and similar to why he won the 2012 election. But I am so confused when it comes to the Republican Party. And the reason why is that Ted Cruz can't actually think that he's going to win. I mean, there's no way that someone with ideas as ridiculous as his really believes he's going to win. And Bobby Jindal can't believe he's going to win. I mean, Jeb Bush, possible. Donald Trump, never. I mean, I cannot imagine a world where Donald Trump would ever be able to win the Republican presidential nomination. And if he stands, you know, I'm really looking forward to the debates. I got to tell you, I'm really looking forward to the debates. And Rick Perry, by the way, is another one. I mean, he's a complete and total fucking idiot. I mean, everyone who, you know, people who are not far-right Republicans here in Texas, which there are a few of us, they mostly live in Austin. Shout out to the ACA. Pretty much everyone who lives here and is not on the far right recognizes how big of a fucking idiot Rick Perry is. So the idea that he could put on a pair of glasses and somehow become studious is just laughable. And, you know, there's...
I was going to say, he has smart guy glasses now. You're overlooking the glasses, but you're not. You were taking those into account.
I was taking those into account. Well, I mean,
that's,
he elected...
That's important.
You know, I took a big shit on Greg Abbott last week, and because he's a fucking moron, too. And, you know, it's funny because it's like Greg Abbott was sort of Rick Perry's boy. Yeah, he's sort of his guy. You know, I mean, you know, this is like his sort of protege. And it's kind of like if someone that crazy is your protege, then how fucking crazy are you? You know, but... I'm really waiting for Donald Trump to punk us. Like, that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting to get punked.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be told that this is all hyperbole, this is all bullshit, that, you know, that, I mean, he's just trying to solidify his, you know, his brand, or, you know, this is all a big joke. Because there's no way that he is fucking serious. There's no way that you come out and basically say, the majority of Mexicans are rapists, but I'm going to get the Latino vote. Like, you have to be truly delusional to believe that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and really what annoys me is that America, this is the country that you have now where rich idiots have the opportunity to run for president and get to be taken seriously enough. I mean, in some straw polls, like, he is posting seconds. Like, this is not a joke. Like, he is the runner-up to Jeb Bush. And I'm like, this is the best that you guys can do. This is the best that you can produce out of your entire party is an old guy with a crappy last name who has already said some really stupid shit, and then a moron, you know, who is basically going around saying that immigrants are, you know, are a bunch of rapists. This is the best that you can do. And you wonder why you're not going to win a presidential election.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Pretty much.
I mean, if fucking... Darby, I mean, explain this to me. You're smarter than I am. Explain it to me, because I don't get it.
Every time... I don't understand it myself. Every time Donald Trump... I mean, I was making a joke about him being a performance artist. And actually, it's funny, because a friend of mine who's a lawyer in L.A. made the same joke about an hour later on Facebook. And I contacted him, and I'm like, great minds, dude. I mean, because it's gone so far out of whack where you can say stuff like that and you just cannot believe it. And last year, or whenever it was, 2 years ago, starting with the legitimate rape thing, who was that, Todd Akin?
Akin, yeah.
I thought, okay, and I've mentioned this to you before, but I'm actually not sure that this is entirely wrong. I'm starting to think that at the Republican National Convention, there's like a gathering where everybody goes, okay, we're going to pay $50 million to the person that can say the most absurd and offensive, like truly disgusting thing and get away with it and not like immediately get thrown out or like, you know, get Howard Deaned or Trent Lauded or whatever. And I hate to put those two people in the same sentence. I still don't understand. Like, you can say that if somebody's really been raped, their body has a way of shutting that whole thing down, which is completely absurd, and I'm not even sure what he's trying to talk about. Like, I don't know who told him that and in what context, because there's nothing about that that's even remotely true. You know how some of these absurd things that they say have this tiny nugget of truth, and then they embellish it so far out that you can't even see the nugget anymore? That's based on nothing. And I thought, okay, this guy's trying, he's going for the win. There's no fucking way that people would say this kind of crap if they weren't trying to win a prize of some kind. it just keeps going from there. You've heard, I mean, Inhofe. Oh my goodness. Scalia, who can't possibly be in the running, although maybe he is, I don't know, says the devil's a real person and is, like, sneaking around causing mischief.
Yeah, but he's gotten wilier. The devil. I mean,
right.
according to him.
Yeah.
He's a lot
right.
more clever
so, I mean,
now than he was before. I guess technology threw him for a loop or something. I mean, you know.
It's no wonder. It is no wonder that people in other countries are like, what is wrong with you? I mean, I don't know. I was working in Europe in 2000, and I can't tell. And when I was in France, I had a bunch of people saying, what happened? I mean, I had people just ask me, "Who did you vote for that guy?" And I was like, no, of course not. And I had no answer for them. They're like, well, who's voting for him? I don't get it. Why? I don't know. I mean, it is baffling that we, I mean, it's because we're the teenager of the world. We think we know everything. We think we can say anything we want. You know,
yeah.
Whatever our parents say is wrong. We have all the entitled teenager money, and we have the nice Jag, and yet, you know, we are completely fucking up all of our stuff, and we don't care. We think we do everything right. You know, almost all Western civilized countries have a single-payer health system. If we want to complain about the UK's or Canada's, we can go and do who's France. France probably has the best one in the world. It's great by pretty much any metric. But we don't want to do that because they're all wrong and we're right, even though ours is failing miserably. Obamacare is a good step, but as we both know, it's not the right end solution, right? So I think we're just absurd, and we culturally we just like to think that whatever we say must be right and smart. And if somebody, especially if somebody pushes your like sort of secret bigotry button, you know, if they flip the protective casing off it and slam the button, and people are like, yes, he's just saying what we're all thinking. Those women were asking for it. I mean, you know, that kind of shit is scary, but it keeps happening. So there must be some reason. All I can do is guess wildly because it's beyond me. It's beyond me how these people don't get laughed off the stage. Howard Dean got laughed out of the race because he got overexcited and was yelling woo. I really liked him, by the way.
I mean, isn't that, I think that you hit the nail on the head, especially when you say we're like the teenager of the world. I mean, we have the money in the Jag and we don't think we're ever wrong. You're absolutely right. We don't. And not only do we not think that we're ever wrong, but we're always so convinced that we are the only ones who are right. Which takes it to like another level completely. You know what I mean?
Yeah, instead of the like entitled teenager, we're like the entitled teenager villain from a John Hughes movie in the 80s.
You know, here's what I've never...
up everybody else's life.
Here's what I've never understood. You know, that you had Sarah Palin, who, and I know, I roll, but, you know, she made a comment several years ago, basically said, you know, she would never apologize for America. And I'm like, why? Like, why wouldn't you? If America did something wrong, then the proper thing to do is to apologize for it. And what's weird is how Christian she is, because, you know, asking for forgiveness for doing something wrong is like totally in their wheelhouse. So that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I find the entire idea.
But you have to do something wrong in the first place, Jerry. You're missing that.
I know, but that's what's crazy is that, do you really think that we've never done anything wrong? I ask people this all the time. Do you really think we?
Me?
No. generally you. But I ask people this all the time, like, do you think America has ever done anything wrong? Especially when I'm, you know, confronted with like a super duper crazy patriot. They're like, no, never done anything wrong. I'm like, you don't think Japanese internment camps were wrong? You don't think that the way we treated the Native Americans, which, by the way, my grandfather was full-blood Nez Perce, you don't think that was wrong? You don't think that the way that we continue to treat them is wrong? You don't think that the way that, you know, that we treat African Americans and other minorities in this country is wrong? I mean, because I'm trying to understand. We literally do nothing wrong. Well, if we never do anything wrong, then why do we have so many problems?
Because everybody's mean to us. I mean, I'm trying to think of the best teenager answer for that. And by the way, I know so many more teenagers that would never have that attitude than I know teenagers with that attitude. I'm just talking about the cliched entitled teenager. To be honest, the ones I know are generally awesome. Like, this is not all teenagers. We are the worst, culturally, the worst kind of teenager. And I don't know what would a spoiled, entitled, self-righteous teenager say when confronted with, where do all these fucking problems come from if they're not your fault? It has to be everybody else's fault, right?
Well, and this comes up anytime whenever we talk about income inequality in this country, right? I mean, you know, so the entire response basically from the right, almost entirely from the right, seems to be like a teenager-based response. And it is, just do more. Just do better. Why can't, you know, it's just this oversimplified idea of reality that completely ignores all of the nuance and complexities that lead so many people, you know, to the point to where they're not making as much money as they should. And, you know,
stuff, not even the nuances or the complexities, which are all important, but even the basic stuff about economics and poverty, they miss. They don't know. They don't understand. It's all
okay,
about bootstraps. They don't understand their own, like, what that even means.
So let's dive into this then. Let's go. I'm pumped. You calling America a teenager got me pumped. That was beautiful. Especially part about the money in the jack, because you're absolutely right. Okay, so when did income inequality, you know, take off? You know, I mean, the studies that I've read, the economic papers that I've seen and tried to dive through, you know, sort of began right after the Carter administration, right into the Reagan administration, and then since it has continued from there.
You are absolutely correct. From the 1940s to the 1970s, and I can tell you where I got these numbers. As you know, this is a very complex thing to calculate, right?
Right.
But these numbers are from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and they explain exactly how they are interpreting and collating data, and they're doing a really thorough job from as many sources as they can get and controlling for factors that are really important. So I can explain that in a minute. But from the 1940s to 1970s, incomes grew at a relatively the same pace, right? Everybody on the bottom and middle and top were sort of all coming up together. And then starting in 1979, so you were right about the administration, and from 1979 to 2007, this is shocking. I'm going to say it slowly for all of our two listeners. Hi, guys. The average after-tax income for the top 1% has quadrupled.
Now, what is the average? Yes, there you go.
The middle class has had it the worst in the same period. Their incomes have gone up 30% from 1979 to 2007.
So middle income earners.
Yeah, the lower middle and the working class people, they've had 40 to 60% gains in that same time. So it's people that sort of fall into the middle that have had the worst problem. And so this is not just some, you know, people deciding that they're screwed. They actually have been screwed in that way. So you were asking, when did this start happening? That's how it started happening. And if you want to know what I mean by middle class, I can tell you, because that's the other problem. Like, we have people reporting that they're middle class because they think they are, but they're not anymore, you know. And then people underreporting who now think they're lower class but actually still fall in the middle class. But this is based on the census data, the Congressional Budget Office, which does multiple sources, mostly from the IRS. And then we have IRS tax data. And then, I don't know how to say this, but it's really funny. Pickety Says. Do you know these guys? These two guys that gather data from the IRS, but they also control for other factors. So this is all these places that we're gathering numbers from. So the middle class is defined by many economists, not everybody, as Americans making within 50% of the median income. So in 2013, those would be people, this is crazy, those would be people making $26,000 and $77,000 a year between that.
Hang on. I'm going to stop you right there. You're telling me that people are reporting that they're middle class income earners who are actually making about $25,000 a year.
If they're single, yes.
Continue.
Okay. As more income is redistributed upwards, the groups fitting into this literal middle class shrunk from 56.5% of the population in 1979 to 45% in 2012. So it's not some weird idea that, like, people think it's disappearing. It is actually disappearing if you're going with that definition of middle class, which seems like a reasonable one to me. It's not some emotionally loaded thing, right? And it's just, okay, so let me back up a little bit here, because we have income and we have wealth, and people talk about income inequality, but what's more important is wealth inequality, as you well know.
Right.
Because what matters is what you have to live. And so wealth is the stuff you have to live. So it's your income, but it's also, you know, adjusted for all the big taxes you're paying, the stuff you're paying out. Do you have a house? Do you have, you know, what adjusted for the health care stuff you have to pay for generally, right? That stuff. Wealth, the wealth redistribution is so much worse. And that is what makes people's lives actually difficult, is lack of wealth. Aside from just lack of income, which is part of a lack of wealth, right? So,
right.
I mean, here's the crazy thing. When I looked this up, it's one of the things I had to read twice, because I knew, we all know about the 1%, right? Oh, right. God, in the past 10 years, oh, God, the income concentration in this country has returned to 1920 levels. The top 1% bring in 31% of all the income, but much worse, the top 1% in this country own 54% of the wealth. The top 1%.
Right. So let me kind of explain the difference between income and wealth.
Did I do a poor job?
No, you didn't.
I'm trying to be a
little bit more specific about it. So
yes, please.
The difference between income and wealth, and you correctly pointed this out, is basically income is the money that you receive and then that you put towards things you need to live. Okay. Wealth is, to sort of simplify this, is sort of all of wealth is the money after the fact that is invested, that is, you know, put toward 401ks and retirement plans or put into real estate. That is the difference. So if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you have an income. If you have money left over after your paycheck and you're investing it into something, you have wealth.
If you have a savings, if you do any of that stuff that actually makes it so that you're secure in your life. Yeah.
Basically, so that you have, you know, assets and collateral is really what it comes down to. And obviously, the argument is that people who have more money will therefore have more wealth, because the percentage of the money that they're spending, you know, to live is a lot less than most normal people. So you know, if I'm spending 10% of my paycheck to cover all of my necessities, and then I have 90% left over to invest, I'm doing pretty good. The problem is that wealth, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy where, of course, rich people have the ability to acquire more wealth because they have a smaller percentage of their income actually goes to the needs side of it, you know, to the actual living part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so of course they're going to continue to create more and more and more wealth. And especially if they, you know, continuously invest in things that are going to be not guaranteed, but almost guaranteed payoffs. I mean,
right. Especially long-term. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if I invest $1 million and I'm going to, you know, see 3 to 5% returns on that $1 million. And I mean, I'm worth 150 or 200 million or $1 billion, $1 million, nothing to me, you know, and I'm going to see 2.5% or, you know, 3 or 4% on those returns. And of course I'm going to do it. I mean, you know, be silly for me not to. This is what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that the wealth in this country, the majority of the wealth, is generated by people that already have it. That the people who used to generate the majority of the wealth, that no longer exists. And it no longer exists because the people at the top are allowed to hoard their wealth and invest it in other places that have nothing to do with this country, have nothing to do with this country's infrastructure. And, you know, I mean, it's sort of kind of a willy-nilly thing. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't lose anything by taking their money that they earned here and moving it over there, other than the fact that depending on where they move it to, sometimes they have to pay taxes on it.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's always really weird to me when I hear people talk about how great America is, and, you know, and then out of the other side of their mouth, they tell me that, you know, for example, well, we shouldn't tax millionaires and billionaires more because they, you know, they'll take their money and leave. So then the question kind of becomes, well, I thought you cared about America. Why would you care about someone who, if we did something that they don't like, they just take their money and they go elsewhere? Are they an American? Or are they more, you know, are they more attached to America? Are they more attached to this country and to the people living within it? Or are they more attached to their money? And if they're more attached to their money, then how is that, in your eyes, patriotic? I mean, it's very difficult. Ironically, every single time I've asked that question, I've never gotten a response that has been even remotely effective or adequate to explain that. Yeah, I mean, how do you answer that question? I mean, it's basically like, well, you know, if America starts screwing them, then of course they're going to leave. Okay, well, the millionaires and billionaires that assisted in building this country that had no problem with a 90% marginal tax rate, which it wasn't always that, but they didn't have a problem investing here. They didn't have a problem paying their people living wages. They didn't have a problem providing benefits. And they didn't have a problem with it because America, back then, produced great products. And, you know, and we were, you know, and we were able to provide a very, you know, sort of comfortable standard of living for a lot of human beings. And we've lost that in this sort of idea that what we need to do is just generate and create more wealth. That what we need is just more money. Everybody in this country, that's the that's the crazy part. That's what I hear from everyone is that, you know, we need to generate and create more money. Everybody needs, you know, more cash. Everybody needs to earn more cash, I should say. You know, and I can't help but note that, I mean, you know, the GDP in this country is $15 trillion fucking dollars. The gross domestic product in the United States of America is $15 trillion. The next closest country is China, and they have about half that. So
Right. Obviously
there's money. Obviously there's growth. Obviously there's opportunity. So where is all the money going? Clearly it's not going to the middle class workers. Clearly it's not going to the poor. So where is that money? Well, it's being redistributed upwards. I mean, You know, and for all my libertarian friends who listen to this show, all two of you, I would just like to point out that that's exactly how capitalism works. Like, that is capitalism. That is unregulated capitalism. I mean, if I can get away with, you know, paying people less money while making more, you know, technically I'm being efficient because the profit motive is the most important aspect.
Right, and that works fine if you're the only person that matters or the are not living in a society where you have to use the infrastructure and, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yes, it is the teenager who ignores all the great things that they have and doesn't understand why everyone else can't be as great as they are.
Yeah, well, they have the dish fairy and the, you know, gas card fairy, and everybody else does all that stuff for them, but it just happens, so you don't need to do anything about it, because that'll just always be there, whether you pay for it or not, right?
That's right. And there's no greater sense of entitlement than believing that... than believing that you don't actually have to contribute to the society that you live in. There's really not.
That
I mean,
is so true.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the... you know, and I always go back to the kids. You know, I mean, it... And personally, I mean, it's a moral position for me that, you know, that no matter what, I mean, children, obviously, you know, if they're going to be brought into this world, we need to ensure that we always take care of them and that they have good educations and that they have access to food. And, you know, these are things that are very personally that are very important to me. But I can also be pragmatic about those positions in the sense that if you want to actually have a society of contributing intelligent adults who, you know, who can maximize their monetary potential, who can maximize their potential with regard or maximize the potential of the government, because the government is now representing a lot of fucking smart people and not a lot of dumb reactionary retards. Excuse me. I don't want to offend anyone. But I mean, you know, but obviously you want people to be able to think for themselves and, you know, and to come to their own conclusions. But at the same time, you want to have a society of people who actually can think for themselves. I mean, is there anywhere in the world where there is a direct correlation between high levels of education and income inequality? Anywhere in the world. Advanced levels of education, I should say. And by advanced, I mean, you know, engineering, science degrees, technology, you know, degrees that involve technology. I mean, you know, where the majority of the population is extremely, extremely well educated.
And they have a terrible problem with income inequality? No, not that I know of. No,
I can't think of one.
So
yeah, and the majority.
The thing is, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, from what you're saying about kids too. I mean, you're these personal responsibility people. You have to take a moment and realize that children don't have any of that. They don't have personal responsibility. We have a responsibility to feed them and educate them. Like, that is what we have, a responsibility we have as a society. And so all of these bootstrap people, you leave these kids behind and you try to cut SNAP programs and you try to, you know, you take stuff away from education. And where do you expect the country to end up when kids can't go to school because they have to drop out and work so that they can help their mom pay rent, their mom who is working? And they can't get a decent education because when you don't eat, your brain doesn't work.
That's right.
What do all the personal responsibility people say about that? What are those kids supposed to do?
Let the free market take care of it.
Right, because that free market is all about making sure that the poor, the disenfranchised, the old and the very young are really well taken care of. Whatever.
Very frustrating, and when you read through a lot of your statistics, I'm sure that you...
Oh, here's a fun one. I love this one. Ready?
Go Go ahead.
The richest country in the world. The United States reached its highest cumulative wealth ever in 2013. It ranked fourth in the world in wealth per person. Guess what the wealth per person is for every American adult. Guess what the number is.
I have no idea.
$348,000 for every American adult. But a typical U.S. adult's total wealth is $31,000. That is absurd. That's that 54% that has gone to the ridiculously rich people. But we don't want to tax them. That might upset them and make them leave.
That's so weird, though. I mean, don't you think that if someone is like, well, I'm going to take my toys and leave the sandbox, doesn't really care about what's happening in the sandbox?
Of course they don't care about what's happening in the sandbox, and I don't give a shit about that guy. Take your ball and go home. Not everybody is going to take their ball and go home. Why do we care?
Well, you know, what I always tell people is, well, if the market's so fucking great, then I guess, you know, the market will take care of itself and another billionaire will step in to,
That's
you
right.
know.
Because there are actually billionaires who do that shit. And so, fuck those guys. If they want to go, let them go. They're not adding anything to this country. And they'll pay social consequences, because when you do that, you move all your money and all your labor to a poor country where you usually exploit people, you take away American jobs, you've pissed off the right and the left right there.
That's the thing, though. Piss off the right. Well, you don't make the right angry in this case, because how can you? They believe in the free market. So, if the free market says...
They do get irritated at companies that take American jobs away. They may blame somebody else. But if we remedied this problem and all we had was the tantruming people, they don't.
I don't care what they say. They don't. They don't. They can't. You can, on one hand, say that you are for the free market. You're for a free market, globalized economy. And then in the same hand also say that, you know, that you believe in, you know, in keeping American jobs here. Do you know how you keep American jobs here? You tax the shit out of imports, which is something Republicans don't want to do. And I know that they don't want to do it because Bernie Sanders suggested it 15 years ago and they said no. Not only did they say no, they said hell no. Because they didn't want to infringe on the market.
Yeah. And yet they do things that affect the market all the time. So this is all about the cherry picking, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much it.
But we won't do that.
I mean, that's their entire fucking slogan. I mean, we'll do this, but we won't do that. We care about this, but we don't care about that. I mean, it's sort of almost become a running joke. I would never vote Republican because these people are absolutely crazy. I mean, not only they're crazy, their entire ideology, their entire worldview is internally contradictory. I mean, okay. So, is there the same people who, you know, don't want to have government regulations? Same people who don't want to have unions? Okay. So how do you plan? And that's the question I always ask my Republican friends. Like, how do you plan on fixing the middle class? How do you plan on doing that? Let me hear your ideas. I'm going to go over that in my ending segment, by the way. But I mean, it's a good question.
Oh yeah, I want to hear that answer.
It's a good fucking question. Like, how do you plan on doing this? And when it comes to income inequality. It's almost like they don't even think that it exists. Like, this is not a problem. It's like sort of this weird kind of social Darwinism or economic Darwinism where, you know, the people who, you know, rise to the top are the ones who should succeed, and the ones who don't are the ones who should fail. And
because we all know that only the people who deserve money have money. Isn't that right?
Which is so fucking weird. I mean, it's like, How good of a country are you when you believe that the people who deserve more money are the people who have the most, and the people who are least deserving of any money or any help are those who have the least? What kind of country do you live in when that is the opinion? I'm genuinely asking because I'm curious, because I don't understand
I
that
don't
concept.
Know.
I mean, it's
I
sort of like,
some idea that,
well,
like,
you know,
God
if
will
you
provide
give,
you. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the John Stewart, you know, argument that, I mean, that if you provide poor people with, you know, with money and with, you know, welfare and social security and shit like that, well, what benefit will they have to work? Okay. Well, what benefit do you provide to millionaires and billionaires when you tax them less and they therefore have more money? I mean, why doesn't the same argument work in both cases? I'll tell you why. It's because of this really weird idea about the concept of work. I mean, it's such a strange thing to me that, you know, that we shouldn't be incentivizing people to go and find something they're passionate about, that they can make money at, that we can train them to do, we can train them to run their own business. Like, that's not what we should be doing. What we should be doing is we should be getting people to work. Okay, well, now we have really low unemployment and we're getting people to work and the people aren't making enough money. Okay, so how are we going to fix that problem? I mean, I don't understand.
Are
you asking me? Oh. No. I sort of rhetorical. The pause was, you know, for effect. But
okay.
You know, but I wonder, like, you want people to work hard. People do work hard. They don't make enough money, and then you say that they're not working hard enough. What? I mean, like, they're doing what you asked them to do, and then they're still not making enough, and you don't want them to live on government subsidies. Okay, well, how the fuck are they going to eat? Where are they going to live? What are they going to do? They can't just bootstrap themselves into a fucking, you know, managerial job and, you know, or a supervisory job and, you know, become CEO of a company tomorrow. I mean, that kind of stuff takes time. So in the time that we're allowing them to achieve those things, What exactly are we doing to ensure that? Well, what are Republicans doing to ensure that? Nothing. That's basically a statement. Fucking nothing. And they're doing absolutely nothing.
Well, and here's the funny thing, Jared. Before you do your rant, it's about time for your rant. But I think it's funny that they don't want to, we don't want to give anybody handouts. Because that'll make it so they don't want to work. But we give huge tax breaks to giant corporations as an incentive to what? And then when the corporations fuck up the environment or hurt people and they get fined, Chris Christie just forgave, I don't know, how many millions of dollars in fines? For why? We don't mind giving corporate welfare, but the idea of helping somebody out so they can eat is just abhorrent.
That's right. This still comes back to my position about work, though. And by work, I'm air quoting it. And the idea is that it's not about the work. It's about how much money you have, period. It has nothing to do with the work. It just doesn't. Like, it has nothing to do with the work. I mean, I work 60 hours a fucking week.
No, you're right.
I mean, I do. Like, I work my ass off. And, you know, and I mean, I do it because I actually really enjoy what I do, and, you know, and I mean, I do. I mean, I care about my employees, and I care about my boss, and I mean, I, you know, I care about my own family, obviously. It's the most important thing. You know, but I work because I like it. And even if tomorrow we had, like, a universal basic income, I would still work because I like to work. But I don't necessarily think that it is the end-all be-all, and I know plenty of very rich people who claim that they work hard, who are fucking morons, who literally have, you know, whose sort of IQ is probably close to, you know, to room temperature, and just happen to get fucking lucky. I know plenty of people like that, and They claim that they're working and they're figuring things out. No, they're not. No, they're not. All right, I got to get to Dumb Shit of the Week, and I only have one this week. So, you know.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. It would be nice if, and, well, I suppose I should set this up. So, the only thing in Dumb Shit of the Week, it would be nice if Republicans would just admit that they don't have a single idea of how to fix anything. I mean, does anybody know what plans the Republicans have for fixing income inequality or climate change or immigration, growing student loan debt, out of control college tuition costs, a minimum wage, healthcare for veterans, mass shootings, our incarceration addiction, Iran, ISIS, racial inequality, lack of maternity and paternity leave, lack of paid vacation, child poverty, or the growing problem of inadequate mental health facilities in this country? I mean, perhaps after 5 years, they're finally ready to tell the American people their grand health care plan. And that shouldn't be, Obamacare is gay and people who support it are gay, so let's try to repeal it for the 70th fucking time. But nobody knows. It's not a plan. But nobody knows what the Republicans are actually proposing. Has a single Republican presidential candidate discussed how they plan on fixing the middle class? I mean, not really. The best they come up with is the idea that the government is too intrusive, and without so much government, businesses would be able to pay their people more. All right. Well, what about immigration? Obama has a plan. What's a Republican plan? Build a huge fence. Okay. Student loan debt? Ah, just stop giving money to students. All right. What about veterans benefits? Privatize it. Iran? Invade. Mass shootings? More guns. The minimum wage? They ask, why does a minimum wage even exist? Child poverty? The government should stop incentivizing women to have children. Climate change? Well, we all know that the real scientists are against it, and the libertarian-leaning think tanks that fund them are totally objective. This is what I've never understood about Republicans. All of their ideas seem to be Americans need to work harder. Yet, when Republicans are told to work harder, their response is to do precisely not that. What is the point of government that doesn't do anything? The entire approach is part of a complicated and scientific concept called starve the beast, which is where they do everything in their power to prevent government from bettering people's lives while simultaneously blaming government's lack of doing anything on government. It's like saying the Bible is true because the Bible says it's true. Republican ideas in this country almost always seem to revolve around the concept of prevent the government from intervening and let the market take care of it. But has that really worked out for people? I mean, Republicans could learn a thing or two from people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Because if you want to call yourselves the party that represents middle-income Americans, then at some point you have to come up with a plan that's going to actually create more middle-class jobs. And since Reagan, the only thing we've really experienced has been an insane amount of wealth growth by a small percentage of the population. Yet Republicans do everything in their power to defend the super rich. And you know who loses? You do. But don't you dare tell anyone that you want the government to do anything about it. Because the only people who do that are, well, every other industrialized, wealthy, and well-educated country on the planet. And who really needs advice from countries where women get paid time off after having a baby? You've been listening to Logicast. We are on every Thursday night, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you for listening. Darby, always a pleasure, my dear.
Indeed.
Good night. We will see you next week.
Good night.